Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another one of our political chats where I'm joined by Dan. And today we've had to re-record the chat that we had yesterday because events have conspired to overtake us and render what we had said completely out of date.
Yes.
Because the confluence of forces in British politics have made it so that the current situation in British politics is hilarious.
Oh, it's
really, really
fun. We are going to have so much fun with this one.
Yeah. The great thing about it is we're on the outside of it, right? We have no dog in the fight that's about to happen. Yeah. And so we get nice content out of it. And no matter what happens, we come out winners from it. So I'm happy with that. Anyway, so basically, just to spoil it, just because then we'll take you through the whole process. But spoil it. Nigel Farage is under a lot of pressure, so he decided to resign in Clacton and call a by-election. And this is after a huge amount of pressure about his personal finances, and it looks like it's backfiring in his face. So what we're going to do is begin with, why has Nigel Farage been under so much pressure? So you may remember, not so long ago, actually, he said this.
Anybody. I can't be bought by anybody.
Hello, Chungus. It's me, Nigel Farage.
Sigma, Sigma on the wall. Who's the skibbiest of them all?
Attention, all sussy gamers.
Wag, wan. Sigma, Sigma spider climbed up the skibbity spout. You have no riz. Fee, fi, fo, fum. I smell the blood of a Chungus one.
He seems to really enjoy doing those cameos. That's a lot of energy. Like, if you paid like 80 quid or whatever to get Nigel Farage to say skibbity riz, and he's doing it with such joy.
So why could somebody on his team not said, if you get 80 quid to do a shout out to Big Chungus, just don't take the 80 quid? Well, we preferably don't do any of this because it may die.
Anyway, famously, Nigel Farage can't be bought unless you pay 80 quid on Cameo. And this has been a problem for Nigel Farage for a little while now. And the media have grabbed hold of this like, you know, a dog grabbing your ankle, and they refuse to let go.
Yes.
And it's threatening to actually bring Nigel Farage down.
I mean, there's nothing actually wrong with this. I mean, in fact, I don't think...
It's not illegal or anything.
There was nothing wrong with anything that he's done, with the exception of the not informing Parliament as he's supposed to by the rules.
We'll get
I don't have an issue. So the left has been going after him because the left just find the idea of anybody making any money ever distasteful. Yes. That's not where we are. We don't care. No. If you want to make yourself look silly by doing a shout out to Big Chungus for 80 quid, go ahead.
Do you know how much he was making on Cameo every month?
How much?
16 grand.
16 grand a month?
16 grand a month by doing those cameos.
So you can see why he did it. It's not.
But he makes a million a year from GB News alone. Yeah. Does he need that extra 16 grand a month?
The problem with it is you can't imagine Anthony Eden doing it.
I can't imagine.
It's not statesmanlike.
Does Winston Churchill do this?
Well, he might actually. But
well, okay, yeah, maybe. But you know, does Nigel Farage's political hero Enoch Powell do this?
Probably not. I would think it's unlikely that Enoch Powell would do this on principle. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, so. Nigel Farage can be bought fairly cheaply, actually. But the issue of Nigel Farage's money has been in the press for about a week, 2 weeks now, because they've realised that Nigel Farage doesn't really have a good answer to this. And what this allows them to do is lean into the worst aspect of British political life, which is the crabs in the bucket mentality. So, oh, you made some money, did you? Ooh, well, that's bad. Making money is bad because some people didn't make money and therefore somehow you're a bad person.
It's not equality or whatever it is, yeah.
It's not equality. Yeah. We can see from the Green Party on about 13%, the Labour Party on about 18%, about a third of the country feels that way. They're kind of like the Soviets, who genuinely think that the only legitimate thing is for you to not have any money because some people don't have any money. And so if you make some money, you are intrinsically suspect. You're intrinsically a bad person.
If you haven't got a broken down old washing machine in your front garden with litter and your daughters can't go outside, there is something wrong with the world unless everybody is equally miserable.
There's a reason that the Four Yorkshiremen sketch from Monty Python actually still resonates with people and why it was funny in its own day.
Yes.
I'm not a Monty Python fan, I'm told it's funny. There's a reason that that mattered because that is a genuine sort of sentiment in the United Kingdom. In England, it's this kind of like low-minded resentment and
envy. Oh, it's a bunch of spiteful mutants. He, as far as I'm concerned, he's got nothing to answer on this. But for some reason, he couldn't answer it because he is so captured by the liberal progressive frame. He feels he has to channel everything through that. He has to go through them. He can't talk to alternative media ever. He's always hated them.
Yeah.
He has to go through the media, and therefore he has to engage with the concerns of the small-minded, you know, bloody leftists.
Yeah, the 30% who will never vote for him, who are calling him a fascist every day.
Yes.
Like the people who are never going to be on his side. There's no point placating these people.
But he tries anyway.
Anyway, so this is the Times expose on posh George Cottrell, who in 2016 was arrested in America and indicted for money laundering, wire fraud, blackmail and extortion. It's a very extensive article that tells... So George Cottrell, he's only 32. He's a trust fund kid. He's got $250 million in a trust fund.
It's a hell of a trust fund.
It is, but it also puts Nigel Farage taking like $5 million or a million here into perspective. I mean,
the people he surrounds himself with are much, much wealthier than him.
Yeah.
And that's why he thinks with his net worth of whatever it is, it must be like 10, 12 million at this point.
Probably more.
But you can understand why he thinks he's a pauper.
Yeah.
Because he surrounds himself with people like this.
Yeah. And they pay everything for him. So, I mean, George Cottrell pays for him to go on private jets. He pays for, you know, all his travel expenses, security, things like that, right? So it's not that there's anything wrong here. It's just surrounding yourself with a trust fund kid who has a criminal record,
yes,
who is paying for everything for you, who is like, you know, 30 years your junior.
Yeah. And again, I don't have a problem with the underlying here. Okay, yeah, he's a convicted criminal. But what is he convicted of? Because he set up a business. He set up a gambling business,
yes,
in the US, and he fell the wrong side of whatever regulatory lines they had laid out that week, because it keeps bloody changing, and they went after him. Now, under a different regime, under a different regulatory environment, he would have been fine. He was just a guy who opened a business, but he got done for money laundering and all the rest of it. And so they can say that's the thing they like to do. He's a convicted criminal. What is he actually convicted of? Opening a business of which people could, if they wanted to, participate in as a customer.
Yeah,
it's not an issue, but
and like, for just exactly that word. Oh, he's a convicted criminal. Well, yes. Did he murder a baby? No.
No.
He's guilty of regulatory or bureaucratic criminality, right?
It's stuff that this is why we generally on this channel, we have ignored all of this stuff, because we don't care. It's not a serious thing.
No,
what we care about is people getting randomly stabbed in the street and all the rest of that nonsense. We don't care about regulatory whatever.
Yeah, this is a crime of procedure, not a crime of morality.
Yes.
Right? As in, the government said you can't do that. Oh, I don't care. I just don't care.
Well, funny you should say crime of procedure, because that's exactly what you're going to be coming to, presumably, with Nigel Farage.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is what we're going to come to. But the point is, Farage is surrounded by like a coterie of, you know, insanely wealthy people, and he likes to swan in those circles, you know, the high status circles, and he takes the money in order to raise his own status. And I mean, you know, Farage is a fairly typical boomer on this. A lot of boomers are really concerned about status signaling and economic genuine, like, having vast amounts of wealth.
Yes.
Like, I could buy multiple houses, but I don't, because I don't want multiple houses. I live in a house.
Anyone with boomer parents will tell you, they're just like, have you got a good job? Are you going to get a good job?
They're very
that mentality, yeah.
And it's status signaling for them.
Yes.
For them, it's making sure that everyone knows that you're doing well.
Yes.
It's like, okay, I don't care what other people think what I'm doing.
What car do you drive? Yeah. Where do you live?
Yeah. Maybe it's a Gen X thing, but I just don't care what they think. I just
Yeah.
Anyway, so the point being, this is fairly typical of that kind of cohort. And that's one of the reasons why Nigel has captured the boomer vote so successfully, is because he really does represent them. He really does actually embody them. Anyway, the next thing was Farage's earnings over the 12 hours work selling gold bullion. He earned £27,000.
Good for him.
Again, what did you think Nigel Farage was worth? He is an international celebrity. He has campaigned for Trump. He's the most recognisable politician in Britain and possibly the most influential in the last, I don't know, 20 years or so. Like, if a company is like, Nigel, we'd like to promote our product, Nigel Farage can charge a premium for his appearances.
I mean, on the moral grounds, I will tell you, if a gold company wants me to flog their gold for 270 grand, I am doing it like that. I mean, just no question.
I'm not, but it's because I'm a terrible capitalist. maybe 12 hours.
I quite like gold anyway, so.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with gold. Gold's probably a good idea, to be honest. This isn't a paid sponsorship. But the point is, this is irrelevant. They paid him money that they thought was worthwhile, that he would take to do the job, and nothing is wrong with it. He declared it. There's nothing wrong here. There's no crime. There's no allegation of wrongdoing. What this is envious crabs in the bucket. People like Beth Rigby being like, oh, well, I can't earn 270 grand by flogging gold bullion. No, you can't because you're not popular.
Yes, because nobody likes Beth Rigby.
Yeah, exactly. But a lot of people do like Nigel Farage. Yeah. So this is what happens with fame and success. This is celebrity. This is, what do you think footballers are paid when they like advertise sneakers or Nikes or whatever they're called?
This is where he's getting caught up. Right, because from our perspective on the right, there's nothing wrong with any of this. However, the parliamentary rules on reporting actually do need to be followed.
Well, okay, let's get to that, in fact. So this is the undeclared £5 million donation by crypto billionaire Christopher Harborne. Now, again, the British media have been like, Nigel, why would he give you 5 million? It's like, well, that's actually really easy to answer. Mm. I was Mr. Brexit. I campaigned for a particular a seismic political change in British politics, and I won, and some crypto billionaire wanted to reward me. And if you're a guy with like £5 billion, giving for us £5 million is a pittance.
Yeah. If I was a crypto billionaire, I wanted Brexit so much, I probably would have given him 5 million myself.
Yeah.
Again and again and again, we look at this stuff and we think, not an issue.
And imagine what they think about this in America. They give me $5 million. Is that it? Like APAC gave me $1 million last year. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like these are genuinely quite small sums of money. Mm. Like, what's Nancy Pelosi worth these days? It's something like $300 million.
Oh, God knows.
Like, it's crazy.
The GDP of Spain, I would imagine.
Yeah, something like that. And so, this is what celebrities get given for the things that they provide to rich people. Rich people want to reward the people that they like. Harborne wanted to reward Farage, so he just gave him 5 million with no strings attached. I completely believe.
And it was after the fact, with no strings. It wasn't like, it would be dodgy if he gave him 5 million pounds as he was becoming prime minister and he said, I want you to change the crypto regulations.
Yep.
That would be dodgy.
And just to be clear, Nigel Farage had not declared himself to be the MP of Clacton at this point, and it didn't look like he was going to. So if you can cast your mind back to 2024, Nigel Farage was saying, well, I'm going to go out to America and campaign for Trump, because it looked like Reform had got to about 10% in the polls, which isn't bad, but it's not winning it.
Yeah, then it had that surge.
But then a poll came out from Clacton that had them on about 32%, which was the lead. And then Nigel Farage...
And he beat that as well.
He did. He yeeted the guy who was currently standing in Clacton, and he decided, no, I'm not going to go to America. I'm going to stand here. And Reform won 5 seats.
Right? Yes. Now, so it's perfectly understandable that he didn't mention it at the time.
Sure.
However, the issue is, and actually these rules are right.
The parliamentary rules state that any benefits should be declared for the 12 months before taking up office as an MP, depending on whether it was for political or personal purposes. The rules state if there's any doubt the benefits should be registered. Now, if depending on whether or not it was for political or personal purposes, well, at the time it's very persuasive to be able to say, well, I wasn't standing for something. I wasn't a politician. I was just going to go out.
That's true. But at the point he won his seat, he should have then disclosed the previous 12 months. And those rules are right. Because
depending on whether it's political or personal purposes, right?
Well, I mean, in either case, because let's say the Chinese embassy gave a prospective parliamentary candidate 5 million for, you know, good works for communism. That is the sort of thing I want to know. So
sure.
If you are going to be a public service, if you are going to be an MP, I don't think it is unreasonable that you should disclose this stuff. And what you should have done is you should have disclosed it at the point of becoming an MP.
Yeah.
Or as soon as he realised he was going to be a parliamentary candidate.
Yeah, should have just done it.
Yeah, should have done it. And he then should have said, there is nothing wrong with me taking this money. But what he's actually did is he didn't disclose it. And that is a clear breach of the parliamentary rules.
He's been advised that actually he was advised he didn't have to.
I can't see how he could have been advised that. That's
well,
just
because
wrong.
As the wording says, if it's political, you've got to declare it. But if it's personal, you might not have to declare
it. If it's a reward for Brexit, it's very hard to argue that's not political.
Well, that's the grey area that he's arguing.
And parliamentary standards do come down tough on this stuff. So, I mean, I remember years ago, Michael Gove accepted a ticket to go and see QPR play.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know anything about football. I know you don't know anything about football, but I do know that QPR, their unique selling point is that they always lose. So it's not a great thing going to watch QPR. But nevertheless, he accepted this ticket, and then he was late in informing Parliament that he had taken something, and they dragged him over the coals for that. So if they're going to drag him over the coals for a late ticket to see a team lose...
Yeah.
They are most definitely going to do it for 5 million quid as a political reward for a political project. I mean, it's just, he should have known better.
And either way, it would have just been prudent to declare it.
Right? Yes, and then the lefties would still come for you anyway because they find making money distasteful. And then he should have said, none of your business, go away, don't care, you spiteful mutants. And that would have been the end of it.
Yeah, declare it before the election, win the election.
Yes.
None of this happens.
Yes.
Right? But... that's not what happened. He decided he wouldn't declare it. But like I said, I don't think there's actually anything wrong with him taking this money. I don't think there's anything wrong with Christopher Harborne giving him this money.
Nope.
And it's completely understandable. I mean, this, like, for example, Peter Thiel funds loads of influencers, right? Because Farage is basically a political influencer at this point.
Peter, if you're watching, get in touch.
Yeah, he doesn't fund us. Nobody funds us. You fund us.
Yes.
We're entirely grassroots, which actually, I'm really proud to be able to say that.
Yes. It's not because we're too proud. It's just that nobody wants to give us money.
Well, that's fine because we don't need anyone's money. But the point is, this is completely normal, right? Billionaire patrons of political influencers that they like. Completely normal. Nothing wrong with it. So anyway, they started going on about his property portfolio now, which again, the number 4 million sounds like a lot until you realise that's 5 properties. So actually, a couple of these properties are less than 500,000 each. And they're only like 3-bed houses or whatever, because property in this country is unbelievably overpriced.
The word empire in this headline is absurd.
Yeah, yeah.
Not with UK house prices. I mean, that could literally be one house in London.
Yeah.
It could be one house in Winchester. It could be one house in lots of places at this point.
Well, yeah. I mean, his main one is his Surrey home, which is 1.5 million nearly.
Right.
And, okay, that sounds big, but it's a 5-bedroom, 4-bathroom home with grounds. So, okay, that's a nice house.
It's a long way from a stately home, though.
Right. It's not some sort of Hollywood mansion, though. No. You know, like a 5-bedroom house, that's not that much. I have a 5-bedroom house. Mm. My house doesn't cost 1.4 million because I don't have loads of grounds, but like a 5-bedroom house is good to have. It's a big house in a village, right? Yeah. Somewhere in England. But like it's, the house price is just way overcosted.
Yep.
Way overcosted, right? So, and then his other ones, he's got like, 4-bedroom house that his girlfriend has in Clacton, which again, a 4-bedroom house for £885,000 in Clacton, a left behind seaside town. Like, this is crazy how expensive these are. But again, that's now considered his, even though it's owned by his girlfriend. Then you have one in a Kent village that his daughter lives in, or his second wife lives in, sorry. Then he's got one that his daughter lives in. And it's like, okay, this is not like, you know, He's not like being Bill Gates buying up farmland or BlackRock buying up villages or something.
No, the word empire in that sentence is absurd.
Doing a lot of heavy.
It's a couple of houses. Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, Nigel Farage, as you said, has not had a good response to all of this. He said, well, it's not the public's business. Well, there's a reward for Brexit campaigning, which I believe that it was.
Yeah, but if you're a politician, it is our business where your money is coming from.
Yeah, well, that's
now,
why it's
making the argument after it's perfectly legitimate is one thing, but all parliamentarians do have to disclose where their money is coming from, because you don't want the Chinese embassy or whatever else influencing our politicians, and it is correct and proper to know that.
Sure. And that's a problem that he just can't get around at this point. And so,
because he's conflating the two issues. The left are attacking him for having made money at all.
Yeah.
He is defending himself for having made money at all. Meanwhile, so that battle is going on. Meanwhile, there's this underlying scene going along, which is, yeah, but the rules are broken.
Yes. And that's the argument he made to Nick Ferrari, saying,
yes,
I could spend it on Ferraris or betting horse if I want. It's like, yes, you
but
can.
But that's not the bit that gets you in trouble.
No. Yeah, exactly. That's the bit that's making the public interested in hearing about
it. That's what makes it salacious.
Yes, that's what makes it salacious. And you're falling into that trap. You should be arguing on the rules and the technicalities. Because, I mean, he claimed that he had had legal advice that said, you don't have to declare this. So whatever that legal advice was, read that out. You know, say, look, I was advised by my lawyers that this, and this. Because then as soon as you're like, as soon as you bring it to the realm of legalese.
Yeah, make it bureaucratic and boring.
The public turns off.
Yes.
Exactly. The public just completely turn off. And there's no, I don't care, you know.
Because I am kind of stunned at that advice, because I can't see how they came to that conclusion. But nevertheless.
I don't know. I'm not.
Nevertheless, do what you say. Read it out.
Yeah.
Make it bureaucratic and then say, look, if Parliament takes a different view, I'm happy to, I've now provided all the details.
I'll pay a fine or whatever you're going to, you know, whatever the punishment is, I'll just have to go through
but,
it. Right?
But keep it boring.
Exactly. Keep it very boring. But he didn't do that. He made it, as you said, salacious by saying, well, I could spend it on Ferraris or betting horses or whatever. It's like,
which just churns the story more.
Yeah, exactly. And so they've been, the dog's been grabbing his ankle and he's been dragging himself away and now he's falling down, the dog's biting him further, you know. So anyway, the Lib Dems, you know, the spiteful mutants, well, not the Lib Dems, the spiteful mutants necessarily, but they report into the Standards Commission. So he's now under investigation, and this will actually go to a full investigation that, as we covered back here,
yes,
won't be concluded until September for some reason. But anyway, so this carries on. And so people in reform are like, look, he hasn't broken any of the rules.
Yeah, but he did, though.
Well, we'll see. Right, that's the thing. I don't know, so I don't want to declare that he does. He has. Right. But the problem is Nigel Farage's responses. He has just not been taking this
well. Will
you
give this money back?
Will you give your salary to charity? How about that? How about that?
I'm not running to be Prime Minister.
If you
Mr.
give
Farage.
Your entire salary to charity, then maybe I will.
He looks angry. He seems discomforted. Right? He's, you know, he's out of sorts about this. Can't get picture of him up now.
Yeah, but again yeah. The left is asking the wrong question, and he's answering the wrong question. It's all about the money. The money is not the issue.
Yes, it's the procedure not being followed that's the issue.
Yeah,
but he's allowed them to make him sound petty and defensive, and as soon as they can smell blood in the water, that's all he gets, non-stop, all around. And so he has this reaction to Sky News doorstepping him as he's coming out of a plane.
Was it a mistake not to declare the gifts from George Cottrell, sir?
You tell your bosses, you harass my family anymore, and I'll take you to serious consequences. That's what your organisation has done this morning. Go away.
Nigel Farage's reaction to...
Again, sounding, you know, angry.
Yeah, he is. I mean, on this, I do have a lot of sympathy for him.
Sure.
In fact, not just him, but I mean all public figures in this country. So the press in this country
are awful.
They are awful. They will, and I think it's not just him. I mean, Dominic Cummings for ages over the COVID period, when he had gone on a drive or something, they camped outside his house. They harassed his family. They were there at all hours, making noise, vehicles running, crowding around, and it wasn't just Dominic coming, it was his family, and it was all of the neighbours were massively put out of this. And they do this all the time. They do this to so many people. It is distasteful, but Nigel Farage is acting like this is, he's the only politician in British history who the press have ever been doing this sort of low tactics to. And whilst I on one hand perfectly agree with him being harassed at home, his family being harassed and all of that kind of stuff, it's very, very distasteful. But that is British politics. That's what happens. And he is acting as if this is as if it only happens to him. It's like, no, Nigel, look, you have to accept if you engage in British politics, and this is why I don't run for Parliament. This is why you don't run for Parliament. Because I want to be able to drive off my bloody driveway and my kids to go to school without going through a press gaggle. If you are going to engage in this, this is the bargain that you make. You have to accept it. And he, and it goes back to his fundamental flaw. He is brittle.
Yes.
And he takes things far too personally. And he does this with personality. So if anybody is Robert Kilroy Silk or Gerald Batten Stephen Wolf or Rupert Lowe, if anybody starts to look more popular than him, the brittleness, the ego comes out. When the press hound him, the brittleness and the ego comes out. It is a major flaw for somebody who is injecting themselves. And he could be the next prime minister. So he's going to get it more than anyone else. Yes, he's treated unfairly. But, I mean, look at Jeremy Corbyn. The way that he was treated when it looked like he had a decent shot of being the prime minister, he was treated possibly even worse. And so I have sympathy for him. But it's within the remit of being a politician for a role that you have chosen to put yourself in.
And also, it's not just that he's chosen to put himself in. If this was his first day, I might understand it. Nigel, you are a veteran of this.
Yes.
You spent 30 years courting the media and being controversial in order to get headlines and make your name so you become a nationally famous politician.
But when you're on the verge of being prime minister, that turns up to 11.
And you know it does.
Yes.
And so you can't say, oh, I was unprepared for this or something like that.
Yeah.
You know exactly how this game is played. So this is not a great surprise. But the problem that he has here is, as you say, he's not the swashbuckling insurrectionist anymore.
No.
Right?
He's not having fun.
He's not having fun. He's now the man who's leading the polls. He has something to lose. Mm. And they know he's got something to lose. And so they've got him. They've got a small thing, but they've latched onto it like a little bulldog, and they're not letting go. And Nigel Farage is having trouble shaking them off.
Yep.
And the more they've been pushing, the more stressed he's been getting.
And it's very obvious that it's working, because a lot of this media circus is to get this kind of reaction. Yep. So the person who handled it, this is why I don't go into politics. But if I had the press on my garden trampling over my flowers and all the rest of it, I would be pissed off, and I'd want to give that reaction. Actually, the correct reaction was what Boris Johnson used to do.
Yes, we bring them out the tea.
Yes.
And just doesn't take them seriously.
He went out in his shorts, in his rugby shirt. He gave them a cup of tea. He didn't talk politics, but he was like polite and amiable, and they got bored and they left him alone. Whereas he gives them exactly, honestly, it is like primary school. If you give the bullies the reaction they want, they will do it more.
Yeah, and so this is something that, like, essentially kind of blew up in his face. I mean, the media attack seems to have been having an effect as well, right?
Yeah.
So his approval ratings have been going down. As you can see, the dissatisfied percentage here has been going up, and you can see this in the last month or so, that tick upwards, because the media have been attacking him on a flank that he's vulnerable on, which is that 30-35% of envious communists who are just like, how dare you make money, and Nigel Farage not being able to bat it away.
Yeah, and I honestly think that his reaction to it is making so much, because if it was old Nigel, he would have had a laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have said, I'm not talking to you outside my house, but come down the pub. He'd be there with his pint.
And I'll buy you the pint or something.
Yeah. Right, he'd be laughing and joking with them, and the image of the normie who doesn't watch much TV would be, oh, good old Nige, down the pub having a pint again. Instead, they see him in the clip you just saw.
I mean, Nigel, the old Nigel, right? Yeah. I reckon he would have done exactly that, taken the media down the pub and then just brought the entire pub around.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I got £5 million. I'm going to buy everyone around. Everyone will be like, yeah, Nigel's buying around.
Yes.
That would have been great optics.
And then when they drink it, they say, well, you're drinking some of that £5 million. So
yeah,
what
exactly
are you talking about?
Exactly. You know, but the loss of aura has been noted.
Yes.
The New Statesmen have realised, and we're not the only ones to have observed this, obviously, but it's become clear that, as you said, Nigel's not having fun.
Yes.
He's not his old swashbuckling self that he used to be. And he actually has something to lose here. And it really does seem that this is kind of locked in now. Mm. Nigel has been floating around 25% for a while now. The Burnham bump didn't really pay off there, did it? You can see there is a bump of about 3 points, 2 or 3 points, which is not terribly impressive for Labour.
I don't think it will last for Labour, but yeah, they got a bump. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about Andy Burnham in the next one, I think.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere for a while.
Yeah, yeah. So, and even Trump has come out in defence of Farage. Yeah, saying, look, they're running the 2024 anti-Trump playbook. So what this has done is built up actually a surprising amount of pressure on Nigel Farage. Nigel Farage feels like he has like an open wound that is bleeding, and his polls are going down. and they have been for a while, and his personal approval rating has gone down specifically because of this recently. And so this is a this is something that is genuinely worrying for him. And this is why the pressure has been building and he has been kind of losing it. This is why he's snapping at the press. And so what he needs is that kind of Trumpian reversal.
Yep.
He needs to be able to judo flip the entire political establishment.
Big bombastic move.
Exactly. And so he put out, I'll make a statement on my future in public life at 2 p.m.
Yes.
So, okay. That's
Yeah. Is he resigning? What's going on?
Well, that's what everyone thought, right?
Yeah.
Everyone thought, oh, he's going to quit. He's going to quit. And Sky News covered it. And so, you know, all the media start covering it. And, of course, Sky News are deeply bound up in this because they're the ones harassing him. I mean, like, his objection about the you leave my family alone is because they went to his daughter's house and they claimed they hadn't contacted her. It's like, okay, but you did go to a house, though, didn't you? You know, I would say that is contacting someone, actually.
Yeah. British press are scum. I'm not going to make any bones about that. They're just scum.
They're just scum.
Yes.
But the point is, you can feel, okay, a big event's coming, and you know the press were hoping, oh, God, let's hope he resigns and we get a scalp, right?
Yeah.
That's what they want.
I think the British left should be very, and I'll come on to explain why in a bit,
yeah,
but the British left should be very cautious about him quitting because it opens a lot of doors if he does.
Yes.
To write reunification.
A lot of things change if Nigel Farage does. But the point is, you can feel the press want their scalp. They know what they're doing. They're trying to bully him out of public life on something that he's actually kind of vulnerable on.
Yes.
And so they've been putting up the pressure, making... I mean, Nigel Farage puts one tweet out and they're like, yeah, everyone, guys, oh, something's going to happen. And so Nigel Farage puts out a statement in which he says, look, I'm going to resign to trigger a by-election. In fact, here's the statement itself. And we'll just watch this for a little bit, just to see the attitude that he has.
I've done nothing wrong. I've thought about it hard, and I've decided today I will resign as a Member of Parliament for Clacton-on-Sea, thereby forcing a by-election, which should happen, I hope, in short order. No, I've decided that the people of Clacton should be the judges of my actions. This will be a people versus the establishment by-election. It's a chance to stick two fingers up to the entire establishment, to frankly tell them where to go. And that is why I will be putting my name forward to stand in this by-election. I will fight to win. I will fight to continue the political revolution that reform has started. And I would say this to you, the voters of Clacton. If I win, you win. Because if I lose, they win. And we will never, with the two old parties, get the type of fundamental change that we need to fix broken Britain.
Now, that is actually the whole thing. It's a long 20-minute video where he actually hits on a series of points that are actually really good points.
Yeah.
It's actually a very strong video. You say, you know, at the beginning he says, I've done nothing wrong, I've not broken the law, I have not misused public money, I've got zero expenses, making money is not a crime, I feel like I'm living in a communist country. All great points. I was going to call this Soviet Britain when I originally drew it up, right? Because that's genuinely how the establishment are acting at this point. You know,
I would call it Nigel Rage Quits.
Possibly, but they're playing on the lowest possible impulses in the British soul.
Yes.
Which is that envy of why has he got more than me? You know, it's disgusting. And so this is bold. Very, very bold move. Because the thing is, Nigel clearly feels like his back's against the wall. Mm. And so he's like, right, okay, I've got to play essentially my Trump card here, my nuclear option, which is if I resign, call an election in Clacton, I'm probably going to win that election in Clacton.
Yes.
And so that essentially settles all...
Let me quickly explain why that is. Okay, because I think he probably did break the parliamentary rules. Sure. It's yet to be decided, but it does look like that way. He should have declared all that kind of stuff. Okay, so what does that mean? That means parliamentary standards look into it. And then they produce their conclusions. That goes off to a committee, and they can censor him. And the way that they would probably censor him is suspending him from parliament for a period of time.
Yeah.
Now, if they suspend him for 10 days or longer, so they probably would suspend him for 10 days, that automatically triggers a recall in his election, in his constituency, where he would have to fight a by-election against everybody else. So he was looking at this and thinking, okay, I'm about to be kicked off the server. If I rage quit now, I can crash the lobby, and then we'll be starting a new lobby on my terms, on my choosing, on my narrative.
Yes.
And the reason why... at the first blush, that looked like a very clever move is because, let's say he had a by-election and everybody contested it and he won and he secured his mandate. If parliamentary standards then a couple of months later says, okay, you need to do a by-election, and he's like, well, I literally just won one.
Yeah.
It makes them look ridiculous. It completely disarms their process. He takes all of the power away from his critics, turns it to himself, puts it on Clacton. And if that's how it went, that would have been a brilliant political move.
Was there. Right. Yes. So, yeah, you are right, but I don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Yes.
So, yes, in the abstract, this seems actually, and we thought initially, oh, this is actually a very smart political move. Not only are you presaging all of those things, as you said, but what he's done here is very aggressively captured the frame.
Yes.
He said, no, look, to the people in Clacton who voted for me, I've decided that I'm going to follow the Andy Burnham playbook. Now, I actually didn't get the link up for this, but Andy Burnham didn't ask me anything on Reddit, where Kemi Badenoch said, well, why aren't you calling a general election, Andy? And he said, well, the people of Makerfield have just endorsed me, therefore I have a democratic mandate. Now, I don't live in Makerfield. I wouldn't have voted for Andy Burnham.
Yes.
Why the hell should that override my ability to have a vote on things?
Yes.
Is a fair question. But the press are acting as if Andy Burnham is actually legitimate because of the win in, yes, Makerfield.
So we think it's a weak argument. Nevertheless, if the establishment has accepted that winning a by-election is legitimising enough to be Prime Minister, it is clearly also legitimising enough to be the leader of the largest polling party.
Yes, and Nigel Farage, when they say, well, what's happening with this, Nigel, you can say, well, I've won this by-election in Clacton.
People of Clacton have decided.
Exactly, the people, yes, of Clacton have decided, so it's not really your business. You know, that's how I get to this position in the first place.
Yep.
So regardless of what
you say, and it disarms the parliamentary standards thing because they look absurd if they force another by-election. Yeah.
Exactly, and Nigel Farage can at least point to a segment of the public that doesn't care about the money issue because Clacton is disproportionately boomers.
Yes, it is.
Who agree with him on this. And so he can just be like, no, I don't, it doesn't matter, don't care. And so he would have a good defense against the media.
Yeah,
right?
Do you have the stats on Clacton in here? If not,
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah,
quickly,
we'll get to,
okay,
we'll get,
fine.
But the point is, this was in the abstract, on the surface, this actually does seem like a clever political move to disarm the current narrative. But it's also a very, very defensive maneuver. This is back firmly against the wall. This is, you know, enemy arrayed against them. They're going to try and push him into the sea. And so Nigel Farage is like, right, okay, I'll summon up everything I've got and play my last card to keep myself in the game. This is very, actually comes from a position of profound weakness on Farage's part. He's not taking enemy territory, right? He's right. Desperately trying to hold on to his own capital.
Yes.
Right? So
but I clumsily stretched for the Julius Caesar analogy. He once was in a very inferior position.
Yeah, I think it was Pharsalus or something like that.
Yes, and he positioned basically his troops with the back to the sea. So yeah, all of his troops knew that if they don't win, they're all going to die. And they fought against a superior army. It was the other Roman guy that he was up against.
It was Battle of Pharsalus, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so Pompey the Great.
Pompey, yeah, that was it. Pompey
had a much larger
in
army. But
yeah, so he played a weak hand well. And, you know, if as long as the all the other parties played along...
As long as things were as you expected them to be...
Yes.
This is a great manoeuvre, right?
Yes.
And so, for example, these are the sort of projections that were coming out immediately afterwards, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Nigel Farage, I mean, in 2024, he won 46%. Likely, he'd win 48%. If Conservatives won, they'd probably get about 20%. Restore would get about 12%. The left doesn't really exist in Clacton, at least to significant numbers.
No.
That looks reasonably...
And we come on to this in a minute, but, you know, Restore would have had a good result there. They would then have the narrative, well, we went from 0 to 7% to 12%. That's a lovely narrative for them.
Yeah.
If they're willing to participate in circus show.
Sure. But what was interesting is Restore were the first people to say, yeah, no, we're not going to do that, actually.
Yeah.
If Farage wins, which he is likely to do, of course, then there will be a second by-election. So we're going to participate in that. We're not going to participate in Farage's little political stunt.
There is a reason we like Rupert.
Oh, yeah.
His political instincts are top-notch here. He saw through the trap being set by Farage.
Yes.
effortlessly. Now, we were both a bit concerned because yesterday evening,
Wasn't clear. We didn't know. Yeah,
well, my advice to Restore, that we sort of back-challenging, was I was saying, one, don't run. Yeah. Two, if you do run, for God's sakes, put up your best media performance, like a media performer like a Charlie Downs or something, and just use it as a national stage to put your issues. And your advice was plain simple. It was just don't run.
Yeah.
But it turns out that he got there all by himself, like, just as quickly. So
yeah, exactly. So, but very sensible. And because this, what Farage is doing here is he's turning this into a story, right? Yeah. He's turning this into the same story that Andy Burnham used in Makerfield. Because Andy Burnham went to the people of Makerfield and said, look, this is a pact between me and you to go against the establishment of the Labour Party, and I'll be your man to overthrow the establishment in Labour and bring Labour back to caring about the people of Manchester and Makerfield and restoring the Labour Party to what it should have been. Nigel Farage is making that same argument to the people of
Clank. It's not quite as bad as Saddam Hussein's presidential referendum, where they said, would you like to back Saddam Hussein or have your family tortured to death? And 98% of people went with it. But nevertheless, it would have been a strong mandate all the same.
Sure, but it's the same narrative. And this narrative is a strong narrative, actually. What he's doing in this is making the people of Clacton the protagonists of the election. Right. What he's saying is, I've decided the people of Clacton should be the judges of my actions, and therefore this will be a people versus the establishment by-election. Yes. I'm on the side of the people. The establishment are the ones who are constantly snipping at me and trying to overthrow me through foul means, not through democratically justified means. Yes. So the people of Clacton become the protagonists. And that's a powerful narrative to get sucked into. That's exactly the same narrative that Burnham used in Makerfield. You are the protagonists now of politics.
This is the first 30 seconds of an Elmer Fudd cartoon where he's pointing his shotgun at Wile E. Coyote, and he's about to pull the trigger. And as long as somebody doesn't flip that barrel around, you know, he's won.
Well, anyway. Yes. Like I said, this power, I don't want to presage it too much, but the powerful narrative, and so it makes sense to not try and intercede in that narrative. Mm. If you're not already involved in that narrative, it's going to be very difficult to say, actually, you shouldn't be the protagonist of the political environment.
Reach for another clumsy military analysis. If the enemy general says, I want to fight at this time on this battlefield, it's probably wise not to participate.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Don't let the enemy choose the grounds of the battle.
Yes.
So it's very difficult to intercede in what is already a dialectic that is happening. Mm-hmm. The media have been attacking him on these grounds. Farage is responding on these grounds. I don't even know what argument you'd have to make to come in and kind of overturn this whole dialect, because this is the story that everyone's focused on, and Farage is playing into the story.
And instead of having to wait to September for the parliamentary standards thing to come to their conclusion, he neutralises it here and now, done and dusted.
Not my problem, not getting involved, right? So very smart. And then that started a bit of a cascade effect, because all of the other parties realised, oh, actually, we don't have to participate either.
Yes. So Rupert got there very, very quickly.
Yes.
Kemi then realised, oh, hang on.
Then Labour realised, then the Lib Dems realised, and the Greens had said, oh, no, we will, but then
they vacillated.
They U-turned. They said,
they're the dumbest of all of them.
Yes, they are. But then they, oh, no, actually, we see what everyone's doing here. We'll pull
they figured it out.
And that left Zia Yusuf and Richard Tice going, oh, they're just cowards. They don't think they'd have a chance. Yes. They're chickens. It's like, no, actually. No,
they're just not walking into a trap.
Exactly. Everyone's seen the trap that you've laid. Yeah. And Rupert Lowe, being the smartest of them, obviously, showed the way, where it was like, actually, if you don't engage in this game, then Farage is playing the game on his own. And he wants to make turkeys of the lot of you. Well, you know, what if there's only one candidate outside of those?
Cometh the hour, cometh the bin.
Yeah. So Count Binface did declare himself. Now, Count Binface, for anyone who doesn't know, is a joke candidate in the long and hallowed tradition of the British public fielding joke candidates in their elections. They usually get about 100 votes, and nobody cares. You know,
the joke is the persistence, and he keeps doing it election after election. Normally runs against the party leader, so he ran in Makerfield.
He did,
and he just keeps.
He stood on the stage next to Andy Burnham when Andy Burnham was in.
And every election for the last, whatever it is, 10 years now, you have to look at the site of your new prime minister giving his acceptance speech next to a man wearing a costume of a bin.
Yes. And this actually flips the narrative completely. Because now instead of Nigel Farage versus the establishment,
yes,
he is the establishment of Clacton. He
versus
is
the joke.
Versus the jester. Right. So now it's the yes. king versus the jester. As okay, Nigel, this was actually like you have actually been Uno reversed by yes. the establishment here. Because yes. you assumed that an election was something everyone would want to pile into and you could win on a level playing field of them all trying to unseat yes. you, you'd be able to win. But if actually they're like, no, we refuse to fight you on this, and you're just left there fighting with an actual joke candidate, yes. you also become a joke candidate.
And there's no way for him to win now. If the other parties stick to this, he can't win. Because, okay, what happens now? Let's say he gets 90% of the vote and he says this is a great victory. Everybody's going to say, yeah, no, you got 90% against a bin.
Yeah.
And that makes him look like a joke. Right. What if he gets 55%? Like,
you nearly lost to Camp Binface.
Yes.
What if he loses to Camp Binface?
So let's say he got 55% like Andy Burnham did in Makerfield. Yep. What does that look like? Okay, yeah, you won, but if you'd won 55% against everybody else, or even just one of them, if even just the Tories or Restore or whoever had stood against him,
a sensible,
and he got 55%, he could say, yeah, I've won, I've got my mandate. But if you get 55% against a bin, it's like, why did you only get 55% against a bin?
But also, it doesn't matter because you were literally fighting against a comedian.
Yes.
You were literally fighting against the comedy character who goes yes. there just to make a
There is
a
no
farce
way to not look absurd. Right, and it gets worse than that, right? Mm. What if he doesn't get 50% against one other candidate who's a bin?
Well, that's we'll come to
okay.
that in a bit.
Right. I mean, I'll run my numbers when it comes to this.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is... But
the
funny.
Exactly. So the very nature of what he was trying to achieve here, to I'll win my mandate back, is now not possible.
No.
Because there's no one to win to. You know, there's no opponent yes. he can overcome to win the mandate. Because he can win by 95% or whatever.
Yes, it so, doesn't yeah, matter.
It doesn't matter. It was Count Binface. No, yes. You were running unopposed, apart from the joke candidate, which you're now taking pride in having beaten. Like, there's no win here now. So actually...
It's a bit like, if you come in the morning and you really impress and say, I beat my children at an arm wrestling competition.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
It doesn't
yeah.
matter how yeah. much you beat them by, yeah. I am not going to be impressed by that.
Nailed it. My son just couldn't, you know, exactly. That's exactly what's happening here, right?
Yes.
So no matter what happens, the victory has been stolen from Farage and the mandate that he would recover cannot now be recovered. But now he is also in for a month or so of campaigning in his own constituency for a by-election he called against nobody of any importance.
And there's so many layers to the hell that Reform is now in.
Yes.
So level one is they're running against a bin, and even if they win, they don't win. Right, the level two of hell, right, is because Farage won last time, not with an absolute majority, he won with 46% of the vote, it's actually possible if everybody else votes for the bin that the bin wins. So he has to take this election seriously.
Really seriously.
He has to take a joke election seriously. He has to mobilise all of the activists.
Yeah.
He has to say to all of the Reform candidates, yeah, if you want to be a candidate at the next election, you have to turn up in Clacton. They have to take a joke election seriously, right? And then the third layer of hell for Reform, right, is that because this doesn't look like a serious election, even though he has to take it seriously and his activist has to take it seriously and his whole party has to take it seriously, there is nothing to stop the parliamentary standards thing saying, yeah, you did break the rules, 10-day suspension, and then they have another election, right? So he has to march all of his Reform voters up the hill to vote for him against a candidate, activating all the activists, and then he has to do it all over again.
And also, a fourth layer is, no one else has to take it seriously. Yes. Like, so he, in his little bubble, is taking this deeply seriously. Yes. Get all the activists out. But we're all just going to be laughing at him.
Yes.
Like, he's going to be in the middle of the arena of politics with everyone just laughing at him.
Yes.
So you've made yourself a national... This is a national humiliation ritual.
He now has to turn out his voters and his activists twice.
Yes.
Once for the joke election, which he cannot afford to not take seriously because he has to.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have... Okay, against a normal election, he wins.
The second election, he probably doesn't have to. right?
No, the second election is actually easier, but he still has to take that one seriously, right? Yeah. Because he's activated everybody for a joke. He has to beg the voters, please actually turn up. Please actually go. I know I'm running against a bin, but please actually go to the polling station. Because if you all assume that I'm going to win, and everybody else is, and everybody else is, and the British public will do this, right?
Yeah.
So a few years ago, the government put up a they were going
to name a boat.
Yes, they were going to put up name a boat, an Arctic explorer or something like that, and they put up various sensible names. And somebody put up Boaty McBoatface.
Everyone's like, "That's my name,"
and it won by a bloody mile.
Yes.
So the British public love a joke when they see one.
They love to be able to screw the establishment.
Yes,
they love to be. Oh, right, you giving us the option to vote on something that we think is trivial.
Yes.
Oh, okay. We'll vote for Boaty McBoatface. We'll vote for Count Binface, mate. You know, like, this is the danger that Nigel Farage is now in.
He's going to have to go all guns blazing twice and hope people don't get pissed off.
The harder he goes, the more funny it would be.
Yes.
To vote for Count Binface.
Yes.
Like, the funnier it's because, like, well, I mean, you know.
I mean, and as to the reform voters, I mean, I've seen this already, right? I had people, because obviously we're associated with Restore. The amount of people who were quote tweeting me and you as well over the past few months with Makerfield and saying Restore has to stand down, and I logged the name of many of them. There was this one guy, Jack something. He comes on here. He's come on here in the past, and he was always pushing. Restore needs to stand down. Now they're all Restore needs to stand. Please, everybody stands. Yeah, before 2 weeks ago, it was, you know, there's something wrong with you if you don't stand down, and now it's there's something wrong with you if you don't stand.
Yeah, I don't want to split the vote.
Yes, we don't want to split the vote. We're giving it all to Nigel, you know, against a bin, and the hilarity of the mental contusions
the
reforms are going to have to go through now.
This is going to be the most exciting campaign I've ever seen. Because, I mean, imagine the hustings, right? Nigel Farage and Count Binface. But the thing is, okay, we just have the Makerfield question time. Do we get the Clacton question time?
With Nigel on a bin.
And Fiona Bruce.
Yes.
Like, do we get that? Like, the whole thing becomes entirely farcical.
And there's no way for him to not look absolutely absurd.
Exactly. The whole thing becomes a national ritual humiliation before the entire nation.
Yes.
And he brought it upon himself because he made a mistake ages ago and just didn't cop to it. Right?
Yeah.
That's what this comes down to. Once again, Nigel Farage has made a rod for his own back.
Yes.
And is literally going to embarrass himself publicly. The second thing, though, is that the media is going to make a national celebrity out of Count Binface.
Yes.
Right? Now, just to be clear, I think Count Binface is a kind of political equivalent of Led by Donkeys, right? Everything he says is completely within the Starmerite frame of politics. He's not going to say anything.
Does he talk about normal politics much? I've only ever heard him.
Oh, he makes jokes. Oh, I will build one social house or something. You know,
okay.
I'm going to nationalize Adele. It's frivolous, trivial, like Led by Donkey style humor.
Yeah,
where it's just like, okay, Liz Truss or a lettuce. You know, it's that kind of.
Yeah, I would say some serious humor. Political advice, because we are now in the world where we have to take this serious. But if Count Binface, if you're watching, my serious political advice is, do not ever step outside of the joke.
Yeah.
Don't make any real world political statements, because what you need to be is you need to be the tasteless burger in the McDonald's burger that is non-offensive to everybody who doesn't want to vote for Nigel Farage. Well,
there's actually a way that you can make this worse for Nigel Farage.
Oh, go on then.
You could actually lean into Nigel Farage's perceived corruption. You could say,
yeah, I don't think Binface could do that.
Well,
but
no, he could.
Well, I suppose he could, yes.
He could say, no, I'm going to make it so that Nigel Farage can take unlimited amounts of donations from anyone, anywhere in the world. With no scrutiny at all. Because what's Nigel Farage is then going to happen? Well, no, I want to be scrutinized. You know, please scrutinize. And then, so now he's going back on his own narrative of, I've done nothing wrong, you should stop asking.
It's a no-win scenario for
Farage
here.
Like, Farage is actually in a trap that's closing in on himself. And it's just like, if Binface just then goes to the other side.
And he set the trap.
Yeah, you set your own trap, Nigel. But Binface could actually go to the other side and just start saying, no, Nigel Farage deserves all this money, deserves no scrutiny. This election shouldn't even be happening because he's done nothing wrong, blah, blah. And then Nigel Farage has to basically argue against his own case. And it's just like, oh my God, okay. So like you said, don't step out of the joke, but that could be included in the joke, right? Because
yeah,
obviously that's not a serious
yes.
Position that anyone would adopt. And you can see he's already going on TV. They're already making a national celebrity of him. And you remember this from Makerfield, where he walked up to the guy, and the guy...
Oh, my goodness.
Right.
A man with a bin on his head.
Right, that's the right response. Ha, ha, ha. Look at this prat with the bin on his face, right? Yeah. And, you know, he's just wondering, yeah, yeah, joke candidate. So you take it. I mean, this host actually didn't take him in as good a humour as he should have done. No. He should have just indulged the joke, you know, and be like, right, okay, so you're an intergalactic politician.
So this reporter was worried about being made to look silly.
Yes.
Stood next to a man with a bin on his head.
Yes.
Right. If the reporter is thinking that over a 30-second clip...
In an election where he's getting zero votes, he got like 100 votes and it doesn't matter at all.
Yes. How is Farage going to feel that he's going to have to engage with a bin?
And, I mean, as you can see, Binface is making great hay out of it.
Yes.
Because why wouldn't he? That was from the Makerfield count. But he got the Daily Star endorsement in 2024 because he's just a joke.
What's going to happen now? What's going to happen now is that the Tories, the Labour, the Lib Dems, etc., the Greens, they're not going to say, vote Binface. What they're going to say is something like, we're not standing it. And then all their proxies
will say,
vote Binface. And, okay, and this is where it gets bad, right? So Nigel Farage's constituency, Clacton, has about 90,000 people in it.
78,000.
It's about 90,000 people, 78,000 are registered to vote.
Oh, well, yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So 90,000 people, 78,000 registered to vote. Yeah. 45,000 actually vote.
We'll get to the numbers in a minute. I want to bring this out a bit more because, I mean, this from the Daily Star is a very lowbrow, low quality paper, left wing paper in Britain. So you can see where they're like, oh yeah, vote Binface. Ha ha. We think that the 2024 election is embarrassing and cringe. Right. Okay. Yeah. Fine. That's what joke candidates are for. When you want to say, I don't really want to participate.
Have they got his policies at the bottom there? I think it says...
National service for PMs, water chiefs to swim in UK waters, and croissant prices capped at £1.10. I mean, to be honest with you, I think they're all good ideas.
Actually, those are good. Yeah, I like those. So far, I haven't seen any politics from him I don't like.
I quite like the nationalisation of Adele as well. I quite liked Adele, but I liked Adele when she was fat. I don't like her when she's thin. She lost Adele, the singer. She lost loads of weight, and I was just like, I'm not into her now.
Yeah.
So, you know, make Adele fine.
I don't know who that is.
Should be a pledge. But right. Anyway, so the point being, it then makes everyone involved look ridiculous.
Yep.
And so watch this. This is great from BBC Breakfast.
You know, if I get the 10 nominations, because, hey, look, there's no guarantee I'm standing for the election, as I'm sure you know. I'm game, but I have to get the signatures from 10 local inhabitants. Otherwise, this is a non-starter. And then, of course, I will tailor my manifesto to the local area, as always. But most of my national policies will remain. Building at least one affordable house, nationalising Adele, bring back CFAX, and, of course, moving the hand dryer in the gents' toilet in the Crown and Treaty Pub, Uxbridge, to a more sensible position, because, as you know, it's a national issue.
Those policies didn't go down too well, did they, with the good people of Makerfield? I believe you got 95 votes at the recent by-election. So how are you hoping to do any better?
What a disgracefully scornful tone. How dare you? 95 actual votes? That's a Dolly Parton. 95, just one shy of a reverse 69, which I scored against Boris in an Uxbridge sports hall in 2019. So I'm cock-a-hoop. I'm over your moon. I'm over my moon. I'm doing very well. I came 7th out of 14. I mean, what more do you want?
What do you say to those other parties who have decided not to field candidates in Clacton?
Well, I mean, that's for them, isn't it, mate? That's democracy. They can choose to run away from my beneficence and magnificence. Or maybe they just noticed that Nigel is up to a rather peculiar hissy fit and they're keeping their powder dry for a second by-election when, of course, the parliamentary committee reports. But interesting, you see, the thing is, that second election, which would cost 380 grand, will only happen if Nigel wins this one. So if you vote Binface, you save the British taxpayer £380,000 without me doing anything.
That's a positive campaign.
Yep.
And if there's one thing that Reform have not been able to run so far,
is a positive.
It's a positive campaign. Farage's, it's, you know, me versus the establishment. Yep. That's still a negative campaign. And the funniest thing about this is, like, I love, like, it makes everyone involved look ridiculous, right? Where's her po face? Look at her, like, serious po face. Like, what are you doing, woman?
Because she has to take it seriously, just like Farage is going to have to take it seriously.
Exactly. Everyone involved is humiliated in public. And he just gets to be a prat because he's a jester, he's a comedian.
And all credit to him, that is the most credible policy for saving money that I have ever heard from a British politician. He actually will save $300,000.
It's actually like there's something positive to the campaign. It's kind of it's genuinely hilarious, right? Okay. Genuinely hilarious. And so he's going to get pumped by the media. I mean, they've already done it.
He's going to get pumped by absolutely everybody.
Yeah,
apart
from Reform, but exactly. But that's because Nigel has got enemies everywhere, right? No one wants to come out on Nigel's side because, well, you've been a dick to everyone.
I think you've shown the polling in the past that you showed it earlier today.
Yeah.
The dissatisfaction is like twice his satisfaction.
69% now.
Yeah. And that will be different in Clacton, but...
Sure. But anyway, the media has already done this. I mean, this was from the Makefield camp where, like, you know, they just sort of gas it up. It's like, ha, isn't this funny? Viewers declare the bonkers interview the greatest 2 minutes of television ever. But yeah, okay. So... The question is then, well, could Binface win? And the answer is, there is a non-zero chance of this. Now, just to be clear, I'm sure Nigel Farage will win, right? I'm sure he'll win.
So I put money on Binface. I put 20 quid on Binface at 11 to 1, and I feel that 11 to 1 is fair. I wouldn't have put money on it, say, 6 to 1,
sure.
But 11 to 1 feels about right.
So, obviously, I think Nigel Farage will win, because everyone assumes Nigel Farage will beat Count Binface.
Yes. But.
But you've got to remember that if there's no Conservative, no Labour, no Liberal Democrat, no Green, what you're looking at there is about 25,000 votes for people who probably don't like Nigel Farage because they have the opportunity to vote for him and they didn't.
And I'll just run the maths. 25,000 is bigger than 21,000.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll quickly run through the numbers. I sort of started on in the wrong place. Clacton, 90,000 people, 78,000 registered voters, 45,000 of them actually voted.
Yeah, 58% turnout. Just on that, the general election in 2024 was a 59% average turnout. Yeah. So actually, this was below average. Yes. Nigel Farage didn't turn out new voters.
Yes.
So there's still 40% of them who are just not bothering.
So 78,000 voters, 45,000 actually voted, 21,000 voted Nigel Farage. Now, what happens if nobody else is running? Now, Ashcroft Polling has done this, and they've looked, and we talked about it in a previous version of this political chat. The most favourable to Reform outside of Reform is Restore, where 19% of them would consider voting Reform if there wasn't a Restore candidate. But that is the peak.
Yeah.
Very few Labour, Lib Dems, Greens and Independents would vote for Reform if there wasn't their preferred candidate. Yeah. And actually, the worst one is the Conservatives. The people who are still voting Conservatives are incredibly unlikely to switch to Reform if there isn't a Conservative.
That's already happened. Like a lot of Reform's body is ex-Conservative.
If you're still a Conservative today...
It's because you don't like Nigel Farage.
You really don't like Reform. You really don't like Nigel Farage. So even if...
The left's penchant for tactical voting...
Yes.
...is, okay, so if these people then say, well, I just don't like Nigel Farage, I'll vote for whoever the other guy is, it's not off the table.
No. So my point is, right... Of those 45,000 voters, of the 25,000 who voted for somebody else, you need at least 10% to flip over to Nigel Farage, right? And then, not only do you need 10% to flip over to Nigel Farage, you need every single person who voted for him at the last election to also turn out for a joke election, and you need none of those other 78,000, of the 78,000 minus 45, you know, the gap between that.
Sort of 35,000.
Yeah, you need none of them to think, this is funny.
Yes.
I'm going to turn up and vote against him. And you also need everybody who voted for you before not to think, oh, this is in the bag, it's a joke election, I'll vote in the next one, and turn up. Which gets you to the point where, okay, this is... And it's dangerous to make predictions, of course, ahead of elections, because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen, right? You've got such imperfect information. And it's one of those things where it will look whatever happens, it will look obvious after the event. Okay, like it looks obvious now that okay, yeah, Andy Burnham is going to win Makerfield because it's always voted Labour, right? So we don't. But honestly, right now we have no idea what's going to happen.
I assume Farage is going
to. But it's not a wild scenario to say that of those 21,000 Reform voters, I don't know, a third can't be bothered to turn up for this.
Yeah,
and it's not wild to say that all the rest of them think, actually, no, this is funny and we're going to give him a kick in and we're going to do it. It's not wild to think...
This is funny / I hate Nigel Farage.
Yes, it's not wild to think the proportion of voters goes down and Binface wins, or the proportion of voters go up because they think it's... So, which brings me back to the point, he has no choice but to throw the absolute kitchen sink at this election.
Yes.
Because if he... And just picture this, right? What happens if he does lose to Count Binface? Obviously, he's off the political map, but Reform itself becomes a joke.
And also, you're not good at winning by-elections.
Like, yes.
Reform is not good at winning by-elections. Yes. So, like, oh, we're going to call a by-election. It's like, don't know if you want to do that, lads. You know, like, you are not experts at these by-elections.
Yes.
You failed every single one, and now this is your capital city. This is Nigel Farage's stronghold.
It's his fortress.
And yeah, exactly. And also, if you lose, the humiliation will be such that it's over for Reform.
Oh, yes.
It's just over for the entire party. No, like, we're just going to vote for Count Binface party.
This is a torpedo under the waterline. Yeah. Just no problem whatsoever.
The risk here is monumental. Yes. Like I said, I'm sure Farage will win.
Yes. Right?
I'm sure that it won't go in the potential way that, as you
said. Like I say, I'm happy with my 11-1, but put it this way, right? If I was handed a revolver with you know, 12 holes in the chamber and one bullet in it, I would not play Russian roulette.
No.
Even though I expect to be absolutely fine.
Even if that shut everyone up who's whining at me.
Yes, even to shut up even to stop them trampling my flowers and turning up at my properties and stuff, I would still not put a bullet to my head with a 1 in 12 chance of blowing my brains out, because blowing my brains out is a really bad thing.
Yes.
And that's what he's done.
And this would be such an ignoble end to Nigel Farage's career as well.
And honestly, he doesn't deserve it, because I love the man for giving us Brexit. I think he should be made a life peer, and a good peer. I'm talking about like a dukedom or an earldom or something.
And he would have been useful. Yes. He would have been useful.
And what he should do is, if he doesn't like the press attention, nobody likes the way the press behaves in this country. If he doesn't like it, go to America, get a chat show host, make $20 million a year, become an elder statesman, interject every now and again, and actually think it's right. It's disastrous for Nigel Farage personally, and he's the danger is that he tanks Reform.
Yeah.
But if he were to leave politics, and okay, I say this, I'm not advocating for this, I'm not pushing this, but at some point the left is going to coalesce.
Yes.
And at some point the right is going to have to coalesce. That narrative about the right unifying.
Farage is the blockage that's preventing.
I don't think it should happen before the election. I don't think it should happen for a good time. I would like for it to happen under our terms. The nativists, I want it to happen under our term. But nevertheless, if you are going to concede that a unification of the right is going to happen at some point in the future, well, you then have to consider, okay, what about next week then? For example, what would it look like if it happened next week? And it can't happen with Nigel Farage, because he is so brittle and egomaniac that he's got so much personal enmity, it can't happen. So let's say he goes off to America and becomes a chat show host. I don't know what would happen before. Maybe, let's say Robert Jenrick were to come in. Yeah. It would be difficult between him and Kemi to tie up. It might be less difficult for Rupert. I don't want any of this to happen, because I want it to happen on our terms much further down the line. But actually, it's not wildly impossible. It's a non-zero probability, to use that term, that without Nigel Farage in the frame, that the right could coalesce. I don't know what that deal would look like, and I'm not advocating, to be absolutely clear before anyone tries to clip me on this, I'm not advocating for it, but it could actually happen. So what the left have done here by forcing this situation, there is a version of the future where it comes back to bite them massively.
Yes. There is a version of the future where basically they expel Farage from British politics.
Yes.
And clear the ground that
and
he was occupying.
And he is the number one blocker to a right reunion.
Absolutely. And it literally is the argument, well, Nigel Farage is already here, therefore don't split the vote. Well, if Nigel Farage disappears, there's no argument against Restore. Yes. And the Conservatives are incredibly weak to the Restore argument because they're the ones who've caused all the problems. I mean, Nigel Farage, this is why Nigel Farage initially in 2024 said, I'm not taking any Tory poison in my party, because it was clear that he'd be able to steamroll them as well.
Yes.
Things have shaken out poorly for him, I guess.
Well, my version of reuniting the right would be that Restore, you know, start leading in the polls, and there's a tiny rump of Reform and Conservatives, and at that point it's like, okay, well, yeah, you can come in and sit in the back room or something.
Sure.
It'd be something like that.
Sure. But anyway, so this is what it comes down to, the Battle of Clacton. And, I mean, honestly,
it's using the UKIP colours.
Yeah, it's using the UKIP colours, yeah. But the thing is, right, there's no real win condition for Farage, as we said.
No.
But also, remember, like, you were saying, oh, it's you know, I'm sure Farage is going to win, right? But there's going to be like a month-long national media campaign where all of the media circus is focused on this. People, you know, all the media is going to go to Clacton, and a few people are, you know, who are you voting for, Farage or Binface, blah, 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 right? And they'll make Binface a national celebrity, and it'll become a kind of cause de celeb. It'll become a fun, like, national project to, oh, let's get Binface into Parliament, right? And so actually turning out that disaffected 40% and the Labour, Tory and Greens and Lib Dems.
Whatever proportion of the non-voters decide to get involved,
well, exactly,
because they think it's funny.
Exactly, right? Yep. So you've got the proportion of those people who vote for the non-reform parties and the 40% who don't vote, and you're doing it because we all hate Nigel Farage. Well, yeah, two-thirds of the people in this country do hate Nigel Farage, and it's been
that's bigger than one-third.
And that's way bigger than one-third.
Yeah.
And if it's all focused on the one joke candidate, because no one has to take responsibility for Binface.
Yes.
It's like, no, we just hate you, and we're just doing this for fun. Like, yeah. It doesn't impact anything. It's not going to determine the Prime Minister. Well, I mean, it might determine a future Prime Minister, but it's not going to, like, ruin the country now.
I think I heard Loza Fox considering running.
Yeah, don't,
that is the wrong move.
Do not. You're going to get beaten by Count Binface, mate. Don't bother.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, let Binface deal with Farage.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, at the very best, Farage wins and he retains his seat until the next by-election.
And if you're Loza Fox's Reclaim party, actually you want a chaos going through the right, because it will break things open for you. So don't. I mean, to anybody considering running,
just don't.
Don't do it.
Just don't. Literally make it so it's just Farage versus Binface.
And one more thing I'll pick up on is you just mentioned you're sure Farage will win.
I mean, he must, right?
Yeah, but it seems incredibly likely.
I know.
But the thing is, again, my point, he can't assume that. And the example I'm going to use is 1997, Michael Portillo.
Yeah.
So Michael Portillo was expected to become Tory leader after the 1997 general election. He was in a safe Conservative seat, and it was so safe that he said to all of his activists, there's literally no point campaigning for me. Go to the neighbouring constituencies and campaign for them. And then on the night of the 1997 general election, he lost his seat. So, and basically that sent...
Do you remember watching the footage? I went back a while ago, watched footage. His face.
Yes.
Like, and he was on TV.
Oh, for anybody who is a sufficient political nerd of a sufficient age, that is seared into your memory, right?
And Portillo seems like a decent chap as well. I like Portillo.
Oh, yeah, I campaigned. I went on his leadership campaign when he did ultimately get back in, the one he had on Barton Street. But my point is, it has been seared into the brain of all politicos. It doesn't matter if you think you're going to win. You give it your all. Otherwise, you get Portillo'd.
And the
as we've done on the maths here, it's not absurd that Binface does win. Just because we think Farage is going to win, it's not absurd that he doesn't.
But the harder he pushes it, the more seriously
more ridiculous he looks.
Exactly. And the more funny it is to actually help Binface win rather than reform. And so anyway, all I'm saying is, right, well, this is a problem of Nigel Farage's own making. He thought he was going to judo flip the entire political establishment.
He set a trap and he forgot to get out of it.
Yeah, he set a trap for himself that he is now within.
Yes.
And if it is literally just him and Binface, that's probably the worst of all possible outcomes that he has decided for himself. So at least it's going to be good content.
Oh, yeah.
Chumba. Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.